most people will choose unhappiness over uncertainty.
You're stepping into the ring with two guys who pull no punches. This is Entrepreneur Showdown.
Happy Monday morning, everybody, and happy early Valentine's Day from us here on the Showdown Podcast. I'm Dan Franks, Joe Cassander. He's coming on in just a minute, and we're here every Monday morning showing you our love by giving you some hard-hitting interviews and some entrepreneurial debates between Joe and myself. And if you like what you do and you want to show us some love back, we set up a special website for you, showdownlove.com. Let us hear how much you love us, just like we're telling you how much we love you. All right, and got all that cheesy Hallmark crap out of the way. Joe made me do it, by the way. But today, our guest, Sean Ogle from Location 180 and from Breaking 80, the golfing blog. He's an interesting guy, and he really is living the location entrepreneur life. But today, Joe and I, we're going to, you know, as we always do, cut through the crap, not pull any punches. We're going to get down to see just how much of a lifestyle independent entrepreneur Sean really is. So we're going to ask him those hard questions. And don't forget, before we get started, for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, you can head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. But with that, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
Right now with Joe, and I want to talk about is email marketing. And we haven't talked about this quite a bit because, quite frankly, Joe and I are both new at the whole email marketing game. But it's really something that people put a lot of emphasis on, and we've tested and we've done some things with. And I wouldn't call it split testing. That's something we need to get to. But just the whole idea of email marketing, so many people put so much thought and effort and you know, really importance on this email marketing. And it's really something that I think, Joe, you and I need to talk through and also pass a message along that, you know, it's a good thing to do and really to do it the right way. And I think to start, you and I, we started the wrong way and it was without a plan. And this is something that I think a lot of people fall into because I've gotten stuck on a lot of autoresponder mailing lists. But it's when you just have a podcast like us and you just send out a message every time you put a new podcast up. And all it is a summary of whatever the podcast is. And the idea is to draw people to your website, then to listen to that same podcast. And it's a really a whole lot of repeated information. And I see a lot of people that I'm on their email list. They do this with blog posts. So they'll send almost a little recap of the blog post, but then ask me to go read the whole thing. And it doesn't really make sense because if you just told me all the important things out of the blog post in your email, why would I ever click through?
Yeah, I guess it depends. Like you said, we're kind of just new to this and haven't really done anything right with it. Just because we haven't had a goal, we just listen to what everyone says and says, hey, make sure you put up an opt-in, because all you hear is, oh, my number one mistake I made is I should have started my email list.
Always. That's what everyone
thing,
says.
It's the first thing you'll say. You'll hear every time. But for a lot of people, I'm starting to unsubscribe from a lot of email lists just because I feel like there's a lot more just selling crap that I don't need anymore. And some people, that's what they do. They just, you just get an email when they're selling stuff. Like, you know, oh, this guy's ramping up to sell his big product or whatever, you know, that's coming. And I feel like there's only like one person that when I get emails, like I always open them because
let me guess.
Hell,
can I guess?
Sure.
Ramit.
It is Ramit. Hi.
Yep. Same here.
Because
he's always selling something. Every time he does it, he's selling something.
He's not selling. So, but okay, if he is selling something, that's fine. But a lot of the time, though, he has a bunch of just good content on top of that. Because even he says, like, hey, my free stuff is great. If you have the money to buy my premium stuff, sure, go ahead. But you're gonna be successful with just my free stuff. While there are other people where I used to enjoy getting their, I'm not gonna name any names now, but I used to enjoy getting their emails. But now they only email when they have like a new podcast up or something like that, or if they're just trying to sell something. While Ramit, he does send out an email when there's a new post, and that's fine. But then on top of that, he always has something else to throw in on the side just for being on his email list, which is, it's hard to do because it takes a lot of work to do that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this because there are different techniques to what your email should say. And we're not going to talk about like the actual copy or tips for the copy, but let's talk about what, I guess, the format of the email is, because you just said, Ramit, he'll post about when he has a new blog post and then also kind of throw something in there. To me, one of the email lists I'm on that I really like is Neil Patel, and he does the same thing. He sends out a message whenever he puts up something new for Quick Sprout, but it's not like a recap of what that post is. So a lot of people think, well, I need a really meaty email or else there's no reason to send out an email at all. And then that's what I'm talking about when they have a full summary of the article in the email itself. But Neil will just send a very quick message. It'll have a link with the title of the post and then just kind of put a tip about it, almost like a couple bullet points, but not even about like what's contained, but he'll tell you why it's important that you read this. And to me, that kind of gets me because I already know that Neil's content's really great, but I'm not checking his site every day. So sending just very quick reminders, I put something up, the email's not long, it takes me 5 seconds to read, and then I know to click through. So to me, if your whole goal is to have somebody click through, it's a very fine art to what it's going to take to make them click through.
But it's tricky because someone like Neil, it's different than the average person because, I mean, first, he's running a company that is all about content marketing. And a lot of his posts, they're very, like, he has very great illustrations and videos and stuff like that. Like
his posts are epic. So his posts are really good.
He spends a lot of time because that's his full-time job is doing that, and he's done it for years. So he can probably get away with something like that. But nowadays, other people, they can't just send an email like and try and copy his format because it's just not as interesting because people don't put in as much time into their posts. I don't put that much time in my posts, but he puts a lot of time in it, and he has a group of writers as well. So I think it depends on what situation that you can get away with that type of format.
Well, so what do you feel like something about what I've seen Pat Flynn do a few times is he'll send out an email, but it'll link to an older post. So maybe not a two-year-old post, but something that's been on his page for a few days, and maybe it's not even the most recent, and he'll send out something about that. And maybe that's to kind of give new legs or second life to that article. But I don't know how I feel about that, because you'd think his most loyal readers already saw that, and then a few days later or a few weeks later, they get a post about it. Have you noticed that?
I haven't noticed that. I noticed that he used to always send out an email for every new post or every new podcast, but maybe I haven't been looking at my emails enough, but I feel like he doesn't do that as much anymore. He may send out an email for a new post and then he mentions that there's a new podcast as well, but I feel like he's starting to consolidate some of his emails. And he doesn't sell a lot either, so you don't get those type of emails from him. So you know if he's sending you something, it's, well, first he personalizes it. He writes usually a good chunk of text that isn't the post. And then second, he has multiple, if say the new post today isn't something that you're going to fancy, like you said, he'll put a link into something else. So maybe that you'll click that link. And so he's getting the traffic no matter what, even if it's not to the new post.
Right. And one of the other things he does too, is he'll send out, in it, kind of separate from those, is he'll send out emails that are just self-contained. They don't have a link to anything. So it's like, hey, here's almost a miniature blog post in an email. There's no external links. It's not barely even sending you back to his own website, except at the very bottom, you know, in the signature line. So that's kind of an interesting technique too, almost like exclusive content for your email subscribers. So that's something interesting. But I think, you know, all these examples we're using between Ramit and Neil and now Pat Flynn, all these people, you know, they're rock stars in our space. So what do you think the secret is for guys our size that are just trying to get their email list started, trying to grow it by giving them high quality content, not getting that attrition with people leaving? What would you say so far that we've seen or you've seen other people do to kind of grow from the bottom up?
That's a hard one. It's because it takes a lot of work to do email marketing and to make it unique in a certain way, because you're already working on your podcast, your blog, and then now you got to focus on emails. And I don't know, something like I wish that we could do. I mean, I wish we had the more time to do it, is that we'd be able to create special things just for the people on our list so that they feel that, hey, this list is valuable to be on. Because, I mean, like I said, I'm starting to unsubscribe from a ton of lists because it's just like all the things that we said before. I'm not going to rehash the reasons why, but like Ramit, you feel special on his list. I mean, there's hundreds, there's probably like over 100,000 on his list, but he always has something special for those that are on his list, something that isn't on his site anywhere. And you feel you like that, that he's putting that extra time in and he's giving it to you free. So, I mean, maybe I'm a freeloader, but I feel special that he's taking that extra time to give something free that's not on his site. And like I said, it takes a ton of work to be able to always provide stuff that's on your site and stuff just for your email list. It takes a ton of time, ton of work, but that's, if you can find a way, maybe even just doing something small, but finding a way to make people on your email list enjoy being on your email list, not just having it in the background and they're, after a while, they're just going to hit delete after for every email that you send anyway.
Yeah, I like that because you really are kind of, people already are on your list because they like what you're doing. So maybe giving them new and unique content in addition to what they're already liking is a good thing. And real quick, before we wrap this up, I want to compliment you, Joe, because our last few email newsletters, so to speak, that have gone out, you've written those. And so for me, I didn't even know you were writing some of them because, like you said, we don't have the best, strategy schedule type thing going on, but I'll see it hit my email box and it'll be from you. And I really enjoy it because you're not pushing anything. You have something you're talking about, but it's not some rehash of what we've already had on the website. It's almost like a special announcement email talking about some unique things. And that's something that's not being seen anywhere else. So it almost has that personal touch, like you are reaching out to the people on our email list and you know you're hitting on something that's going to interest them because they're on our list. So I have to compliment you that I like you doing that to, you know, it's personal. It's almost like your thoughts. It's not as structured as a blog post or as a podcast to where you have to follow some kind of format. It's just you kind of writing almost a personal letter to the audience. And I like that. So I got to compliment you for that and say, I think that is the direction that I would go if I could say that's what we should do. But just more of it because it's been pretty sporadic.
Well, I appreciate that. It's hard for me because I'm not a natural writer. I enjoy writing stories and whatnot, but content type stuff where you're teaching someone, it doesn't come as natural to me. So it's hard to find always good stuff that I'm willing to write about and whatnot. So I always struggle because I'm like, should I write a blog post about this or should I just put it in the email list? And it's usually I just get analysis paralysis and then I don't do anything.
Right. Well, I think it's sometimes not being the best at something makes it come across more genuine, because a lot of times if you're good at something, you start to overthink things and really be so harsh on yourself that maybe it's analysis paralysis that way as well. Or you just come out with something that sounds really phony and overthought. So I think being more natural in the email, because let's be honest, when email started, it was just communication, one-on-one communication between two people that have genuine interest for each other. So if your emails are personal and they do feel like just a one-on-one conversation, then I think that's probably the way to go. And those are the ones that, after talking about some of these, those are the ones that I like best as well. But we've talked enough about email marketing. Let's get on to round two.
Round two.
Today in round two, Joe and I are going to be talking about an article by Sean Ogle from Location 180. And on his Location 180 site, he lists this giant bucket list of, you know, close to 100, maybe more of these things that he's trying to accomplish in his life. And he's checked off way more than most people ever would. And I saw his most recent like Twitter update said, you know, hey, I went back and checked my bucket list, hadn't looked at it in a while, and I got to cross 7 off at one time, because, you know, in the course of whatever, however many months it took him to, you know, update it between, or be in between updates, he crossed off 7 of them unknowingly. So he's got a pretty fascinating life and he's done some crazy things, and he's coming on in the main event, of course, and we'll cover all that. But the article we're looking at right now, it's called How to Come Up with an Incredible Business Idea and Validate It. So this is interesting because this is something we've talked about really early on with the foundation guys, with Andy Drish and Dane Maxwell. But you know, Sean has a different way of going about it, because Sean, one of his big things is he wants to be the lifestyle entrepreneur. You know, if you look up lifestyle entrepreneur in Wikipedia, because it's probably not in the dictionary, but if you were to look it up, it's somebody that wants to live life on their own terms, and they want to find a way to generate income that won't infringe too much on this lifestyle that they want to develop for themselves. So his approach is a little different than Dane and Andy's, because I know Dane and Andy, some of those guys that have graduated from the foundation are working crazy hours. I mean, we talked to Sam Ovens about that a while back. So, you know, Sean has a different approach to it, and he has this three-step approach to idea generation. And just very briefly, it's brainstorming. And then the second step is developing your lifestyle choices, or kind of laying out what it is that you want your life to look like. And then it's kind of going back and matching up what brainstorm ideas you came up with what are going to fit in your lifestyle. And then once you've narrowed down, you know, kind of matched up those two and narrowed it down, then you go to the validation process. So I don't know if anything from this article jumped out at you specifically, Joe.
I think the walking around part is interesting. I mean, everyone brainstorms, everyone writes down what stuff do you like to do and whatnot. So that didn't really stand out to me. But when you said just take a problem walk and just like have a pen and paper and just think about pretty much all the problems that you have in your life. Because I mean, sometimes I'll try and do it, like I'm just in bed and I can't go to sleep, so I'm trying to think of problems, and it just doesn't work as much as maybe if you're walking. So that's something I'll have to try. I thought his ideas, though, he said like, hey, I'm sitting in a coffee shop and I could come up with multiple business ideas. And he gave off four pretty good ones that I kind of wish I could think of them that fast. But I guess he has that idea muscle working for him, that he's always looking for problems, or he knows how to find certain solutions or whatnot, that I guess many people, you kind of got to train yourself to be able to think like that.
Well, yeah, and you called it a muscle, and that's a good way to think about it. It's not, you know, you don't have an idea abilities. It's not like, okay, it's something you're either inherently born with the ability to come up with ideas or not. It really is getting yourself in that mindset and really practicing the art of coming up with ideas. And I think that is something you pointed out, the problem walk that he came up with, which I think his idea was to walk around with a pen and a paper for an hour, just walk around the neighborhood or a store or anything and just write down problems that you see. But I think the way you were maybe approaching it was, hey, just kind of changing the environment, changing up your physical movements, just walking, then you inherently, you know, you can come up with ideas inside of you, not necessarily what you're seeing around you. And I think that, to me, I always find value in brainstorming outside of my normal comfort zone. So even if it's sometimes, I know a lot of people say they get the best ideas in the shower, you know, just this place where you're not typically used to coming up with ideas. You're not sitting at your computer, or you're not sitting there, you know, with a book brainstorming, but maybe you're just doing something that shouldn't necessarily be a great place to come up with ideas, but for whatever reason is. And I think maybe to grow that idea brainstorming muscle, or whatever you would call it, maybe you need to find what your personal space is physically, you know, whatever that environment is that helps you come up with those best ideas.
But it's like the shower used to work for me, but then I feel like since I realized that it worked, like it doesn't work anymore. So it's
no, I think it's once you realize, like, hey, when I was coming up with ideas in the shower, I was still stinking when I came out, so now I actually got to focus in the shower instead of coming up with ideas.
But I don't know, like I feel like that I used to have, just like when I played music, that I'd have song ideas while I'm in the shower, but now like I don't have them anymore, because I feel like since I realized that, like, I have to find another area where I don't know, you like stumble upon it instead of you actually actively think about it, which I guess is where people use it as an excuse too, because they say, oh, well, great ideas don't hit me, they only hit that person, they have that gift to do that. And some people use that as an excuse, but I guess if you try different things, and that's what, and try a different way to think of ideas, kind of like what he said, you go just take a problem walk. No one's doing that, and so maybe that's what's going to jumpstart you. Or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's riding a bike, or maybe it's running on the treadmill. I don't know. Maybe those are the ways that stimulate your mind to think more creatively. So it, for those listening, maybe you don't have to take a problem walk. Maybe it's just get out of your normal way of life and out of your normal box and go and do something that maybe you don't normally do. And maybe that's where the inspiration's going to hit.
Right. Well, and to round it out before we get to Sean in the main event, let's talk about his number three step. So this is the three steps to how to come up with a business idea. And he calls it an incredible business idea. But I think more, maybe it would be just more of a useful business idea, something that works for you as opposed to being incredible. But the third one is validation. So the first step was brainstorming. The second step was kind of figuring out what your lifestyle needs to be and then molding that brainstorming around it. And the third is validation. And he has some interesting tips on validation that I think we'll get into with Sean. But I want to listen to you and what you say, because I know you've gone through a couple different testing phases with a couple different ideas. And I'm not sure we've shared all of them on the air. So what have you gone through and what have you learned from your different validation processes you've gone through?
Well, one of them, I guess validation can also go along with finding an idea, because one of their ideas is reach out to people and... people in different industries and ask them what their problem is. And if a lot of them have that problem, then it's a validation step as well. But I've tried Google Ads, and that actually works pretty well. I just got a lot of Google Ads, and I drew, you just pay like whatever, $30 or something, and you get a bunch of traffic to your landing page, and you see if they take a certain action. And my action was to click a certain button on the page, and no one clicked it. So I figured it wasn't a validated idea. Maybe I gave up too early on that idea, but I wasn't that interested in it anyway. But I've never tried surveys, which is one thing. I've heard those can be a little wishy-washy.
Well, and there's a difference. Surveys, you have to already have some kind of audience. You can't just, if you don't have people to throw the survey out to, then you can't have a survey at all. So it's not necessarily validating a brand new idea. You have to have something established.
So maybe that's a platform building first, and then you go with that. And then recently I've been trying Quora. You just post a question, and you won't get a ton of responses depending on the type of question that you ask. But Quora is good because usually there's a lot of intelligent people, and you can ask intelligent people as well. There's a button that says click to ask this person. And you can get feedback on it as well, or maybe, hey, actually you're not allowed to do this, it's illegal or whatever. But that's a good tool as well. You won't get as much interaction with that as maybe an ad campaign, but we can discuss with him some other forms of validation, because one of them he said is cold calls. A lot of people don't like to do cold calls. I don't like cold calls. So,
I think the benefit to cold calling, and he even mentions this in the article, and we can dig deeper into him, because cold calling people don't like to do, as you said, but it's really almost that brainstorming and the validation all at once. So if you're trying to come up with ideas, and if you take the idea extraction method from the foundation with Dane and Andy, and you're calling, the example used in this article is real estate agents, and you're calling them and asking them what their pains are, what their problems are, well, that's brainstorming right there. But at the same time, if they're telling you what their problems are, then you're getting validated right there as well. So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. Then in Sean's process, the only thing you have left is to determine if that problem is something you can fix and still fit in your lifestyle. So I think maybe cold calling is the one that people dislike the most, but at the same time, it might be the most productive of them all. So we don't want to waste any more time. We're going to get into all of this and a whole lot more with Sean Ogle in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today in the main event, we welcome on the ultimate lifestyle entrepreneur, Sean Ogle. He was a finance major that got his start in online business with the guys from Tropical MBA and Tropical Talk Radio when he headed to Thailand to do SEO, consulting, affiliate marketing, and everything else in between. Sean soon realized that building a dream that fit around his lifestyle and not the other way around was within reach, and he now lives by the mantra, build a business, live anywhere, and achieve freedom. He's a location rebel, but actually more importantly to me, he played a lot of badass golf courses for his Breaking 80 project. So that's something I want to get into with him later on. But without further ado, let's bring him on. Sean Ogle, what's going on, man?
Dude, that was a better bio than I could have written myself. I might steal that and just start giving it to people. That was awesome.
That's what everyone says. We really should sell these intros.
You know what? Yeah, right before we came on, we were coming up with all kinds of different business ideas for you. So that might be one for Joe and I to capitalize on.
There you go. I like it. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sean, what we typically do is we like to dive right into whatever piece of content we've picked out, but we like to ask our guests, what other podcasts have they been on that they felt like they told their backstory really well that we can send our audience to listen?
I did one on Entrepreneur on Fire here within the last month. It was probably a pretty good one. It tells the whole backstory and was relatively entertaining, so I'd probably point people in that direction.
Okay, so you're definitely ready to ignite on that episode. We'll say that.
There you go.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, full of them. So Sean, what Joe and I covered in round two and we're planning on talking to you about is one of your more recent blog posts, and it's how to come up with an incredible business idea and then validate it. And this is something that a lot of the entrepreneurs that I guess are our audience is mostly based on, is this is one of the biggest problems they come up with. So what was your motivation for writing this blog post?
You know, I get emails all the time from people that are just like, you know, I want to start my own business. I'm kind of afraid. I don't know what to do. But in the end, they always say, or a lot of the time they say, I just don't have a good idea. I'm not sure what to do. And I listened to that. I was like, that's bull. It's like, there's so many good ideas out there. It's like, it's not a matter of ideas. It's just a matter of picking one and going with it. And so this post was me kind of being frustrated, being like, I'm sitting here, I think in the post I even talk about, it's like, I'm sitting here at a coffee shop right now. I can look around and in 1 minute, I can spout off five different business opportunities just by kind of looking around. But when it comes down to it, to look at things that way, you kind of have to shift your mindset a little bit. And so that's what I start to talk about in the post. And, you know, that's kind of the response I give to a lot of people via email.
Well, and I think it's interesting because, you know, I'm on your autoresponder list and I get a lot of your emails for the newest post, and most of them I go read, but sometimes I don't read them right away. But something about this one, this was back in November of 2013, it was posted and I went and read this one right away. And then I look and it has more comments than a lot of your other posts and more social shares than a lot of your other posts. So just something about this topic, I guess it's because this is the situation most people are in. This is just the topic that people want to read about. But why do you think people love to read about it and love to learn about it, but they still don't take the action?
Well, I mean, that's with anything. There's so many people that are sitting in their day jobs, in their cubicle, and it's way easier to read and daydream and think about all the possibilities. But what I've found is, you know, Tim Ferriss once said, most people will choose unhappiness over uncertainty. And I think that that's completely true. Most people would, you know, they don't want to act on things. They just want to, you know, think about doing it and be like, it would be great if I could do this. And they can read blogs like mine and listen to podcasts like yours and, you know, get all the motivation in the world and feel good for a while and then just never do it. One of the reasons I think this particular post worked well in Location 180 is one of the things I've learned is, you know, my audience is very beginner focused. People that either don't have a business yet and want one, or people who are just getting started. And so anytime I write a post that's, you know, very oriented to that person who hasn't quite figured out what they want to do or is just getting started, those tend to have a lot of success. And so I should probably do that more often and write posts like that more often. But you can only write those types of posts so much.
Well, a lot of people, I feel like when you're sitting at the coffee shop and you spout out four ideas, which are actually pretty good ideas, even if you just pulled them out of your ass. But a lot of people, they feel like they don't have that creativity, and they don't like you said, it is a mindset shift. But at the same time, isn't there sort of a, I don't know, kind of like a muscle that you kind of have to build over time? But did the old Sean, when he was the financial analyst, would he be able to spout off those four good ideas right away?
Well, kind of like I said, you have to make the mindset shift. So instead of thinking of, you know, thinking everything's a problem, you start looking for solutions. I mean, that's essentially what an entrepreneur does, is they find solutions to common problems. You know, I do think that it's something anybody can do. You know, if I were to say, hey, right now, you know, give me, you know, three things you're having problems with, you know, I won't do it and put you on the spot, but it's like every day we're thinking about, it's like, oh man, I wish there was this, like, even if it's subconsciously. And once you kind of bring that out and start saying, okay, like, enough of problems, like, let's start looking at solutions. What can I offer to somebody else? And I think it's just a matter of doing it more. I think a lot of people just don't consciously think like that. And so, you know, hopefully someone's listening to this and they're like, you know, I don't do that. Like, for the next, you know, 1 week, I'm going to, you know, make a conscious effort to start looking around and finding solutions to problems that are out there. You know, in that post, I talk about the, the problem walk or the solution walk, where it's literally just go spend an hour walking around your city looking for potential problems and potential solutions, and just starting to think down that path, you know, eventually it starts to become second nature. And as entrepreneurs, I think most people have really developed that. So I think anybody can do it, but I think you have to consciously make the decision to get started with it.
Well, we're definitely going to get into the problem walk, because that was something that intrigued Joe a lot, and he brought that up when we talked about it in round two. But before we get into this post in depth, I want to ask you, because you said one of the biggest problems that a lot of the readers have, based purely on, you know, statistics and what you can see as far as your readership and the social shares of these posts go, is that getting started is the hardest part. And you kind of took that leap. You quit your day job and went and basically did an internship with the Tropical MBA guys. What was it that caused you or led you to taking that initial jump? Like, once you got there and once you got involved with it, you saw that it was very doable, something that you could accomplish. But what was it that kind of lit the fire under your butt to make you take that initial leap?
Well, I think, you know, if people go listen to other podcasts where I talk about the backstory, I'll talk about this a little bit. But in 2009, me and my best friend took a trip to Rio for Carnival. I'd saved up all my vacation time to do it. You know, I begged my boss for months to let me go. And it was on that trip, you know, we're kind of walking down Copacabana Beach, and it's like, man, this is freaking awesome. Like, I want to do this more. And, you know, I'd always had two goals for myself. I wanted to own my own business, and I wanted to travel. And those were two things that I wasn't doing in my day job. And so it was after that, I was like, all right, we need to start kind of getting on the path that's going to take me to where I want to go. And I ended up leaving my job earlier than I probably would have liked. But, you know, I was actually talking to someone earlier today about this, the idea that, you know, it's right to leave your job when the pain of staying is worse than the pain of leaving. And I finally got to that point where I was like, man, I just can't handle this anymore. I need to make a change. Even if it's scary, even if it's uncertain, we're going to see what happens. And luckily, I had been building up Location 180 for about 6 months prior to that. So I had a little bit of traction. I didn't really know where things were going to go. And it was a couple weeks after that that Dan approached me and the whole Tropical MBA thing came about.
Very cool. Well, let's get into this post now. And the thing that Joe and I talked about a lot in round two, and I think it makes up the meat of this post, are these three steps, three very generic steps, but three basic steps, how to come up with an incredible business idea and validate it. But the thing that jumped out to me was something you kind of glanced over. You started off the post with it, but you glanced over it. And this is learn to love uncertainty. And you gave three steps to how to, or three phases of uncertainty and kind of how to conquer that, or maybe how you conquer that. Can you just go over that just a little bit?
Yeah. So the first phase of uncertainty is fearing it. And this is where, you know, the vast majority of all people will stay. You know, kind of that quote I told you about Tim Ferriss, most people choose unhappiness over uncertainty. Totally the truth. A lot of people have great, comfortable lives. They don't want to shake it up. There's no need for them to. And so they can stay and they can fear that uncertainty, and that's fine. But if you want to be successful as an entrepreneur, you want to build this kind of lifestyle where you can work from anywhere, then you got to move on to step two, which is overcoming the uncertainty. So at this point, you're still terrified. You still don't know what's going to happen, but you make the conscious decision to take a chance anyway. So when I left my job and I ended up going to Thailand, I was still terrified of what was going to happen. But I decided, you know, this is an opportunity. I need to take this. And then, you know, a few, even smaller percent of the population will move on to step three, which is embracing the uncertainty. And this is an entrepreneur's best friend, because if you embrace uncertainty, you recognize that you have no idea what's going to happen in the future. So therefore, you can make anything you want happen. And when you start looking at things from that lens and you start looking at, you know, solutions and possibilities as opposed to problems and roadblocks, you know, that's where success really happens.
Okay, a lot of people, they're, like you said, they're going to hit that first and they're going to start fearing it. So what are you saying stuff to yourself, or do you have people around you that are telling you, yes, this is what you should quit your job? Or what if you're on the other end and you have people are saying, no, to do what everyone else is doing? That's the traditional way. What's going on in your head that you're able to get over this hump that a lot of people aren't able to do it? Is there something going on around you that other people don't have?
Not necessarily. And I think it's one of those things, very early on when I made these decisions to change, I did what most people don't do, is I actually analyzed it. I kind of put conscious thought into what I wanted to do. You know, so many people just kind of take the path of least resistance. They go to college, they get a job, they get married, they have kids, and they end up down that path. And what I said was, well, what are my goals? I want to travel. I want to own a business. I want to have a flexible lifestyle, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, what, if I'm on that path now, am I doing that? Okay, no, I'm not. Okay, what are my roadblocks? Well, I'm afraid of, you know, if I lose my job, how am I going to pay my rent? You know, what are my friends and family going to think? Basically, what I would do is I would take all those kind of excuses and all those uncertainties, and I would break them down even farther. So I basically said, okay, I can't pay the rent. Okay, well, then what happens? How would I actually, you know, how would I make money to do that? It's like, well, I know how to paint houses. I can go do that. You start thinking about solutions to all of the common problems you make. And then you kind of build it back up and say, okay, well, I know that if this, this, and this happens, well, here's my contingency plans. And those really aren't that bad. So I might as well take a risk and take a chance because the worst case scenario isn't nearly as bad as I might have thought it was. And I think that's something most people just don't do. They don't take the time to say, what is making me feel this way? What is actually holding me back? And when you do, most people realize that, hey, this actually isn't so scary because, you know, the scariest part about it probably isn't going to happen.
Well, you hear all the time people say have goals and whatnot. How concrete are these goals? Are they very generic? I want to travel. I want to work for myself. Or are they very, next year I'm going to be living in Thailand and making this amount of money? Or what? How is that goal for you?
Well, one of the things I've seen that's kind of scary is a lot of people don't know what they want. And that's a big problem. If you don't know what you want, then you're never going to have enough motivation to actually, you know, start going through those phases of uncertainty and actually making changes. A lot of people are just unhappy and they haven't, you know, figured out how to get rid of that. However, you know, there are people, when people sign up for my newsletter, I ask them two things. I say, one, reply to me right now and tell me what you're struggling with and tell me what your example of a perfect day looks like. And, you know, probably one out of every five, I will get someone that just, you know, lists off like hour by hour, this is what I want to do. This is my perfect day. These are the people I want to work with. And every time I see that, I'm like, man, now this is a guy I can help. He knows what he wants. He has the motivation to get there. He just needs to, you know, put the pieces into place to make that happen. But for most people, it's like until you can figure out what you want and what you're working towards, you know, there's not a whole lot anybody can do. That's kind of this really important piece of the puzzle.
Well, let me ask. So I'm interested in that tactic, and I've seen that before where you ask people to respond to your emails.
Right.
First of all, I want to know, you said maybe 20% of the people actually are really specific about what they want, but what percentage of your email list actually responds at all?
I get about 25 to 35% of people that sign up that respond and answer the questions.
Okay, so that's really good. I think that's me, from the outside looking in, that seems pretty awesome. Like a lot of people, if you get open rates close to that, you're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thrilled with that. And that's been, I learned that from Derek Halpern maybe 18 months ago. And it's been hands down the best thing I could have ever done for my business because it catches people off guard. It allows me to build a relationship with them. It establishes trust and I get really valuable things. I got people telling me exactly what their problem is and exactly what their solution looks like. So I can use that in all my marketing and all my blog posts and take that information to help, you know, write things that are going to be solutions for them and market products, et cetera. So
that was going to be my question. Like you get these answers and some of them are really, really in depth and really detailed. And you know, if you can extrapolate that across the entirety of people reading your blog and things like that, then you can kind of put a number to how many people this is going to help and how many people will maybe take action on this. But so more specifically, what do you do when you get those responses from people? Do you actually try to convert those people into clients or customers or just kind of use that information for future products and services?
It's totally a case by case basis. I try and personally respond to every single email I get where I get if they wrote something thoughtful to me, I try and write something thoughtful back. You know, sometimes like what they're telling me they need and the position they're in is it's like, you need to buy Location Rebel. You know, it's kind of my membership community and course. It's like, this is perfect for you. I guarantee this is kind of the solution you're looking for. And, you know, I'll direct them that way. But more often than not, I kind of tell them my philosophy on how to build a business, you know, what I would do. And I try and just kind of point them in the right direction. Anytime somebody gives me something where it's a specific problem they're having or a specific solution, I've got an Evernote file or it's just a big long list of all of those things. And every time I'm getting ready to rewrite a sales page or do a promotion, you know, write certain types of blog posts, I go back through that and I look for specific words and verbiages that I'm seeing over and over again. And so that helps me kind of craft that.
For Location Rebel, how big a portion is this brainstorming, finding idea portion?
How big of it is in the process?
Like out of the program, out of the program, is this a big part of it or is it you have a very small portion of it and the rest of it is geared towards building a business rather than actually looking for a problem and an idea?
You know, it's not as, you know, I think you guys have interviewed Dane and Andy of The Foundation in the past. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, I mean, they talk like their whole first 3 months is all about, you know, idea generation and, you know, finding problems and all that kind of stuff. Location Rebel doesn't focus on that as much, because my goal, what I want to help people do, is I want to help them make money as quickly as I can and help get them get the confidence to know that they can do that. With most of that, you don't necessarily need to find a problem. You know, it's, I kind of tell people there's three steps in the process: build skills, freelance one of those skills, and then apply that to your own projects. And so when you're applying it to your own projects, that's when it's like, okay, what are problems I'm trying to solve? What kind of business do I want to have? But steps one and two are pretty formulaic. And if people put in the time, they can do that. So, you know, Location Rebel is a success. If I can get people to the point where they're making $3,000 to $5,000 in freelance income and freeing up a bunch of their time to be able to, you know, devote to whatever projects or businesses they're most excited about. You know, once I've done that, I feel like that's, I've kind of done the job of Location Rebel, and then they can go join the foundation or something like that. That's, a little more in depth with, you know, those types of, kind of intense businesses.
Well, staying on the brainstorming topic, because this is step one in your idea generation post that we're talking about.
Right.
And you already talked about the problem walk, which I think you specifically said walk around town and look at problems that you witness or you see while you're walking. But Joe and I almost interpreted that to mean just kind of getting yourself out of your element, getting into a different environment, just creates different thought patterns in your head. Do you have any tips or tricks that you use in addition to the problem walk to just kind of think at things or look at things differently?
You know, one of the best things you can do for that is obviously to put yourself out of your comfort zone. But I like to go to meetups where I know absolutely nobody and have no clue like what they're talking about. You know, it's like, for me, I don't know anything about web design. So I've actually gone to a web design meetup where it's like, I just like talking to people, hearing, you know, what their problems are, you know, looking at the types of things that they need in their business. You know, it allows me to kind of look at things from a different perspective. You know, you could do something even, you know, crazier and go to like a jewelry makers meetup or things like that, mm-hmm. where you're getting in touch with a different group of people that think about things in a different way and have a different set of problems. And if you can start thinking about, okay, well, how could I solve a problem for them? And then you go to someone else. And it's like, well, how could I solve a problem for them? And then you start, it basically, you're just kind of, you know, exercising that muscle a little bit. You know, some of the best people I know, there's a guy named Nick Reese, who has a blog. It's nicholasreese.com. And he's the best at this I've ever seen. He could go to someone in any business, any industry, and, you know, you could talk about problems and immediately he's coming up with really, really high quality strategic solutions. And so I think one of the best ways to do that is, you know, to take the problem walk and look at solutions, but also actually go to places where you have to interact with people, and, you know, look at their real world problems.
Have you and or your clients, do you find more success trying to solve a problem that you have personally or that you get from talking with other people and finding their problems?
I think it depends. You know, for me personally, I like building businesses around things that I like to do. So for me, I really like building businesses. I really like to travel. I really like this idea of location independence. So for me, I've kind of devoted my whole business and brand to solving that problem for people, helping them get out of jobs they don't like, helping them do more stuff that they enjoy doing in their lives and helping them build businesses to do that. So for me, I solve problems, you know, like that. I think that there's definitely a lot of people and a lot of people that I work with that, you know, that's not as much of an issue. Maybe they just, you know, they want to just make money and find a business and, find a way to do that. And so I think that's where you look at what other people are looking at. You know, it's like, for instance, use Dane as an example again. I mean, he started with a real estate business. I don't necessarily think he was super passionate about real estate, but he found an opportunity for where he could help a group of people and, you know, make quite a bit of money in the process. So I think it all just depends on what your goals are. I by no means think you need to have a business you're passionate about, but for me personally, let me rephrase that. I don't think you have to do something that you're super in love with every second. I think that having a business can enable you to do more things like that. But for me personally, that's just, you know, whenever possible, I try and, you know, build business like that. That didn't make a lot of sense, but whatever. I think you get the point.
Well, I'm trying to figure out from someone who is thinking about, because they've heard Dane and they've heard, hey, don't have an idea, just go find one and solve it, even if you aren't passionate about it. Because we talked to some of the foundation people like Sam Ovens and
right.
and company, and some of them, they say, yeah, I'm not really passionate about this, I just think it's interesting. And then you're on the other end, you say, hey, I like doing I love playing golf, so I'm building something around golf. I love all these different things, and so I build them around that. And so someone may be caught in between, and they may even use that as an excuse not to get going because they don't know which side to go on.
You know, if that's the case, you know, I'm kind of at the point where, kind of like I said before, you know, step one, you know, build relevant skills, build WordPress skills, build copywriting skills, things like that. Step number two, you have to find a way to make money. I mean, right now I can go and I can spend a bunch of time, you know, building my photography site and my golf site because I've got income from various places that allow me to do that. But when you're just getting started, you want to create that freedom for yourself. You know, if you're in a job and you're like, I can't leave my job until I'm making $3,000 a month, you want to get to the point where you're making that $3,000 as quickly as possible. Because once you do that, you leave and say maybe it takes you 25, 30 hours writing, you know, freelance SEO articles to do that. Then all of a sudden, you've got all this extra time where you can, you know, devote to doing, you know, building a business that you are passionate about. You know, there are a lot of guys out there that, you know, they're like, ah, you know, I'm not really into this, but, you know, there was a need. And so I built a product. You know, that's not personally me. I kind of come from the other perspective. I think you should be working to get to that point where the stuff you're doing in business is stuff you enjoy doing. But I do think when you're starting out, you know, getting to that first, you know, $3,000 a month, then it doesn't matter. You know, get to the point where you're making money, where you've got that confidence. And then from there, you can decide what kind of business you want.
Well, I think it's interesting because step two is lifestyle. So we've kind of already blended the brainstorming and the lifestyle steps together here and trying to design that life and that business that you want. And you've said multiple times, and I've seen in a couple different places, that you'd rather earn less money, but be a little happier with the lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
But then I think maybe someone looking long term and maybe a pessimist type personality would say, well, but then you're going to be working nonstop for that length of time because you're not maybe necessarily making enough to stash it away. Whereas someone like MJ DeMarco would say, work your ass off for 5 or 10 years. And then after that, then you can kind of coast to the finish line. So what's the mentality that goes into deciding one over the other?
You know, I think it's totally a personal choice. I think that if you do things right, you don't necessarily have to make that choice. For instance, you know, this year I'll probably make about 4 times what I was making as a financial analyst. I've played 75 rounds of golf. I've helped, you know, probably a few hundred people leave their jobs and build businesses. And I've traveled all over the world. You know, that's the type of business that I wanted to create. So, you know, I have no aversion to making a lot of money. And, you know, I build a business to try and do that. But, you know, I would take, you know, $50,000 a year and working from now until I die, doing what I was able to do, you know, these last couple of years, than I would making, you know, $250,000 and having to work 70 hours a week and not being able to enjoy the lifestyle stuff. So, you know, for some people, it is all about the money. You know, they want to buy a Ferrari. They want to, you know, have $1 million. They want to go stay in 5-star resorts everywhere they go. And if that's important to them, then yeah, go for that type of business. You know, for me, I like those things, but I don't necessarily have to have them. I enjoy the freedom and the time more than that.
Okay, so you've played all these rounds of golf. Have you broken 80 yet?
No, I shot an 82 this summer. That's as close as I've gotten.
Wow.
Well, you need to update your bucket list on your breaking80.com website then, because we don't have crosses through the shoot a 90 or shoot an 85 yet.
I know. I was looking at the location 180 bucket list just yesterday, and I realized there were 7 things that I'd done that I hadn't crossed off yet. So it felt pretty good to be able to go back and be like, hey, I am still making progress on this.
Well, just kind of as a... I guess you call it intermission in our normal talk. What's left, since you had a chance recently to look back over that bucket list, what's left on there that you just have to do? And I know the bucket list idea is like all the things you want to do, but what are like the highest priority items on that bucket list right now?
Sticking with the golf thing, I really want to play Augusta National. You know, that's kind of the holy grail for golfers, as you know. So that's definitely one of them. There's a lot of travel. I've traveled a lot in the last couple of years, especially around the US and especially to Asia, but I haven't been back to Europe since I graduated college. So I'd really like to go out there and, you know, I want to go to the Monaco Grand Prix. You know, I want to go, you know, drink scotch in Scotland. You know, I want to go to Oktoberfest in Germany. So there's a lot of travel things that I still haven't done that I need to start branching out and kind of crossing off.
So for like this breaking 80, where did this idea come from? Just so we can go back to the idea extraction type part. Where did you come up with this idea? And just like walk us through from the beginning, so for someone that's new, they can understand where you were coming from.
Yeah, so basically I was looking at different golf websites and most of them were not very good. You know, you had a few really big sites that did things really well, but all the kind of, you know, independent blogs, they weren't writing about things in an interesting way. And when they weren't taking, you know, very good photos and things like that. And so there was a couple blogs that I'd read where people are trying to play the top 100 courses in the US. And I read those and was like, man, this is awesome. Like, I'm big on like travel. And so playing all the different courses is kind of the most fun part for me. And so I said, well, what if I did the same thing, but I came at it from a different perspective? A lot of these guys are 50, 60 years old. They're retired. They come from money. You know, I'm 28, have no connections in the golf industry, you know, don't necessarily have a ton of money. You know, so how would I accomplish this? And when I do, what can I do to set myself apart from other people that are doing it? And so basically I take my every time I play a top course, I take my DSLR. I take really high quality photographs. I put a lot of thought into the write-ups I do. And so I try and make it, you know, kind of an interesting escape for a golfer who doesn't get to travel a lot or wants to play these courses and isn't able to. I was like, I want to make this as interesting for those people as I can. And that's kind of what's been happening. In the process, I've also looked for win-win situations with the courses. So I say, hey, you know, I'm coming out. This is the type of write-up I'm going to do. You know, can you help me out? And so I can get sometimes, you know, free hotel stays, free greens fees, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so gosh, that's kind of
really
where, it started and where it's going. I started it in March of this year. I said, I'm not going to worry about monetizing it for at least 12 months. I'm just going to try and meet more people, play more golf, and have some experiences I wouldn't have otherwise had. And that's exactly what's happened.
Is there a hidden goal? Maybe you've read it, maybe you've said it somewhere, but are you trying to maybe one day do a professional type thing or no?
Professional what?
Golf.
Oh, I will never be a professional golfer.
So you're not shooting for that?
Not shooting for that. You know, there's a guy called the Dan Plan who actually lives here in Portland. He's trying to test Gladwell's theory of 10,000 hours. So he left his job and he's literally to play golf full time. And so he's putting in 10,000 hours. And after that time, he's going to try and go to Q school and qualify to be a professional. That's definitely not me. I just like meeting cool people and playing golf in cool places.
So you get some free rounds out of this site, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I took, you know, I did a golf road trip. So I made this goal. I wanted to play the top 100 and the top 100 public courses by the time I was 35. So that's 7 years. And I kind of, you know, I crossed off, you know, a couple courses earlier this year, but I was like, well, how am I going to actually make progress on this? So I found the highest concentration of top courses I could find. Flew in, rented a car, and I played 15 rounds in 15 days. And so I kind of marketed this whole golf road trip thing, and I approached every course that I was going to tell them what I was doing, and said, you know, if you want to help out or if there's anything you can do, you know, I'd really appreciate it. And probably a third of the places gave me free hotel rooms and free golf. A third of them gave me some kind of media rate, and then a third of them I just never heard back from or didn't offer me anything. So I ended up saving a ton of money, playing some of the best courses in the country, just by reaching out and trying to kind of find that win-win scenario.
I bet you could get some kind of coverage in one of these golf magazines or something with this.
That's kind of the goal. You know, one of the things I found is that breaking into the golf industry has been harder than I expected to. you know, some of the blogging principles that I applied to Location 180 haven't worked as well. So it's a lot of kind of networking and trying to figure out what people are looking for. And so I still have a backlog of all these reviews I've got to put together. It takes me about 4 hours for every one I do between the photo editing and writing. And so once all those are done, then I can, you know, start working towards reaching out to some of the major media outlets and, you know, kind of trying to sell them on the idea.
So what's like your exact pitch when you're doing this too, especially these big clubs? You're saying, hey, I mean, you're doing a write-up, but is there any other thing that you throw in there that makes them want to like throw in a free hotel stay and whatnot?
You know, it's one of those things where they want exposure. You know, it's like they're trying to, you know, the economy's still, you know, kind of tight. People aren't necessarily spending a ton of money on this. And, you know, all the traditional means of advertising, you know, they're not quite as effective anymore. You don't see people buying radio spots or buying television ads as much. You know, so if I can prove, you know, hey, you know, look at this course over here. If you type in this course name, my review saying really nice things with a bunch of beautiful pictures shows up third. You know, how would you like a review like this for you? If I type in, say, Whistling Straits, and I'm the third thing that comes up, and it makes you guys look fantastic, You know, that's a great form of marketing. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. If I'm coming midweek, playing around, and you know, you're giving me a hotel stay, it doesn't necessarily cost you anything. So there's a lot of upside. And so the more reviews I've done and the more tweaks I've gotten, you know, kind of refining the process, the more people I'm finding are being like, yeah, this is awesome. We totally want you to come out here. So, so I try not to take advantage of it, and I try and give them more value than they're giving me. So that's kind of how I approach it.
Well, that's a good idea. I wish I would have thought of that. I'm just gonna move on out of jealousy here.
Yeah. But, where are you guys? What cities do you live in?
Dallas.
Dallas. I know there's at least a couple courses down there. So when I make it down that way, I'll see what I can do about getting you guys out on a round with me.
We'll take it. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So on this post, we've gone over brainstorming and a little bit about lifestyle. So let's kind of work our way to the third part, which is validation. And one of the interesting things I thought that you brought up was the idea that cold calling can kind of work as brainstorming and validation. But unfortunately, this thing that can kind of double up is the thing that people hate doing most. Do you do a lot of cold calling, or have you in the past? And kind of what's your experience, and how did you conquer those fears?
You know, I personally don't do a lot of cold calling now. I did when my first business was, I owned a house painting business all through college. That's how I paid my way through college. So I used to just go knock on people's doors, you know, every weekend when I was in school and say, you know, hey, do you need your house painted? Hey, you know, here's some problems. You know, I'm seeing, hey, are you interested in this? So I got the chance to kind of try a variety of different pitches to see what worked and what didn't. I think that, you know, now, especially if you're looking for niche ideas and you're trying to kind of, you know, come up with some different business ideas, and that's the way you're going to approach it, cold calling is an excellent approach. You say, okay, I'm going to try and come up with a solution for plumbers. And basically what you do, and this again is something that Dane and Andy have talked a lot about, but you call them up and say, you know, hey, I just want to talk to you, you know, for a couple minutes. I'm doing a research project or whatever you want to call it. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what some of the common problems you're facing in your industry. And most often people will be willing to talk to you about it. And, you know, from there, you're one, getting ideas for problems they're having, so you can start forming solutions. And then if you find that you've called 20 people and they all have the same problem, then that also validates the idea. So, you know, it really turns into kind of a win-win scenario, as long as you don't necessarily care what type of business you go into. If you're just going into the business because you find a problem and you know you can provide a solution, then this is a great way to, you know, both find and validate ideas.
Well, so you mentioned you don't do that as much now. What is your top validation tactic that you're using right now that seems to work the best?
To be honest, what's worked really well is kind of the email marketing stuff. So like I said, every time somebody emails me, I ask them to respond. And so in those responses, you know, I can throw out ideas where it's like, if they're like, hey, I have this problem, you know, often I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. I'm thinking about putting together this program for X, Y, and Z. Is that something you might be interested in if I created it? And if, you know, if I email 10 people and they all come back and say, yeah, this is perfect, I would love that. And then it's like, okay, obviously there's a market there. You know, also just in my, I have a weekly newsletter that goes out every Sunday. If I'm thinking about doing something, then I'll, you know, maybe say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Is this something you're interested in? And sometimes you'll get, you know, 100 responses, and sometimes you'll get 5. So, you know, there's no hard and fast way. Sometimes you just kind of have to read in between the lines of what your audience is interested in. You know, for instance, posts that get more shares and more, you know, comments and more traction, you know, those are, you know, potential ideas. And so that's another way I validate it. If I'm thinking about putting together a new program, for instance, you know, when I launched Hacking the High Life last year, I wrote an article, you know, that was kind of talking about some of those concepts. And, you know, a lot of people were really interested in it. I got a lot of emails about it. And so that was like kind of a sign, oh, hey, you know, people want more of this.
So I'm just looking at, I'm looking at Facebook, because I know I've tested ideas with Facebook. Have you tested ideas with Facebook ads, and have you had success with that?
Yes and no. I've done some Facebook ad stuff, specifically when I was building up the golf site. You know, I kind of took a different approach where I wanted to build the Facebook page before I built up the website. And that's actually proved to work pretty well, is kind of building up a following of people on a platform that they use more frequently, and then kind of constantly directing them back to your site. So that was one big way I validated that idea. I said, well, let's build up this community. And if people are interested in it and they're engaging in it, then I know there's people that are looking for this type of information. I know other people have done a lot of validation by doing Facebook ads and then sending people to webinars. And that's been another big way. But personally, the only thing I've done is with that golf site.
So for just your Facebook page, what's it like? You get a lot of interaction for it, especially with 2,000 followers. Like, you get a lot more interaction than most people with that many followers. What's working on that page that you see results from?
One, photos. You know, kind of what I found is people love beautiful photos. So, you know, I'll translate that to location 180, and I'll put photos of me working in cool places, or, you know, readers that are working in cool places, and that's worked well in the past. Also questions. So if you have a photo and then follow that up with, you know, hey, where are you going golfing this weekend? People love to talk about their lives. They like to make it personal. I've given that advice to, you know, one person I can think of in particular, where it's like, you know, try and engage people, ask questions, and then nobody would respond to them. And I think a big part of the problem with that is the questions were targeted at them as opposed to the user. So if you say, hey, give me feedback on, or, you know, hey, you know, what's the biggest problem you've seen with my website? It's not based on the user, the person on Facebook. It's all about you. But if you say, hey, you know, where are you going this weekend, or where, you know, are you golfing or whatever, that's about them. And people like to talk about themselves. And so the more you can make it about them, the more success you're going to have, at least based on the experience I've had.
Is there an idea you've tested recently you'd be willing to share?
That's a good question. But one of the things that we, you know, there wasn't a real specific testing process for this, but we've launched Pioneer Nation, which is our conference for independent entrepreneurs that I'm putting on with Chris Guillebeau and Tyler Trevorin and a couple other guys. And so that's been kind of a 6-month process of going back and forth and talking to people about what they'd be interested in terms of conference, you know, if there's a market for it, if there's lacking things they've, you know, wished they had seen in other events. And so that was something we said, hey, there's a market for this. We kind of validated it, and we just launched that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I like the idea of doing something a little more focused and niche down, if you want to use kind of that phrase that people have been using a lot, but niche down from like World Domination Summit. It's a little more specific towards the target, I guess, with the plans that the audience will get more out of it.
Yeah. You know, I talked to some people and they're like, you know, WDS is just too overwhelming. You know, I'm introverted and I didn't know how to go up and approach people, and I felt kind of out of the loop. And, you know, I don't think most people feel like that, but what we want to do is really target a very specific group of people, the people that are working for themselves. They value freedom more than anything else and are looking for resources for how to grow a business that's going to allow them to live that type of lifestyle. And, you know, it was kind of through all that validation, we were able to narrow that down so much.
Well, very cool. Well, we've covered this topic of how to come up with a business idea in very broad terms, but we'll link in the show notes to additional steps, because Sean shares a bunch of his other tactics in that post as well. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. Where should people go to learn more about you and your current projects?
You can go to SeanOgle.com. That's probably the easiest way to find me, at Sean Ogle on Twitter, and Facebook.com/location180.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Sean.
Nah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.